Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 1098. Fascism, 2019 World Tour, Part 8, The Intermarium Concept. This is being recorded on November 12th of the year 2019. This is going to be the first of two programs dealing with the concept of the intermarium, which was introduced in the last two programs. That is a political agenda slash ideology, which is held in common by, among other elements, the Azov Battalion, about which we have spoken many times. They are networking with Croatian fascists of the Ustashi persuasion. And as we will see, the geopolitical position of Ukraine in the world island or earth island is something that we will be considering not only in terms of national and international power politics, but also in terms of ideological power politics as well. The earth island or world island is a concept, and please forgive me, veteran listeners who know this, but this is not the sort of thing that people generally deal with. But the Earth Island, or World Island, as it is called, is something that has long been focused on by geopoliticians as the essence, or the icon, or the goal of world domination. That is a stretch of land that runs from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Europe, covers much of what we call the Middle East, most of what we call Asia, including China and Russia and India. And that is a stretch of land that contains most of the world's landmass. It contains most of the world's population. It contains most of the world's natural resources, including and especially petroleum. And geopoliticians have long seen controlling or effectively dominating that landmass, the Earth or World Island, as the key to world domination. We will be dealing with the position of Ukraine in the Earth Island or World Island, and the way that was conceptualized originally by British geopolitician Harold Mackinder, and later not only by Zbigniew Brzezinski, but as we will see, by international fascists who have been networking and or playing with that concept going back to the immediate aftermath of World War I, running on up through the period in which fascism was gaining momentum in the 1930s, World War II itself, and then something that remained part of the ideological, political, and geopolitical arsenal of post-World War II fascists, including many that had been networked with and or incorporated into elements of Western intelligence, including CIA and BND in Germany. The concept of intermarium, as we will see, not only is something that the Azov Battalion and the Azov Milieu has clutched to their bosom, but something that is very much present in strategic discussion that the elements of our national security establishment, elements associated with the Trump administration, and fascist elements around the world have been espousing and or embracing. Much of the discussion in this two-part series, it might stretch as long as three. We'll have to see how the reading goes. Will consist of a reading by me of an academic paper that was featured in Covert Action magazine. Now, this is an academic paper. It will not be easy listening, and this will be admittedly very pedantic, even by my admittedly extremely pedantic on-air standards. If there were a Guinness Book of World Records for on-air slash radio pedantry, I would own it, I think, hands down. And this, as I said, this couple of shows, maybe as many as three, will be pedantic, even by my pedantic standards. I do think, however, that it is worth highlighting this in the written descriptions for these programs. The article is reproduced in its entirety, and I emphatically encourage listeners to this program to use the website, visit that description, and to share that with other people who you think might appreciate it or could use it. Something that I want to begin with, not directly related to the Intermarium, but rather to the position of Ukraine as an epicenter for fascist outreach. In our last program, we not only talked about the Azov Battalion, its networking with other European fascist movements, including elements in the, quote, new, unquote, Croatia, but we spoke about how not only Azov, but Ukraine in general and organizations like Pravi Sector or Right Sector have been vehicles for Nazis, fascists, and white supremacists of various iterations to network together and to achieve combat experience, and then they have returned to their countries of origin, enriched not only by the ideological networking with their corresponding numbers from other countries, but perhaps even more importantly with combat experience and skill at combat arms, which can then be used in their native countries. In an article from For the Record program number 1096 and 97 that we looked at from a Balkan blog, talking about networking between the Azov Battalion and Croatian fascists, we quoted, or the article, I should say, the post quoted a user on the Daily Stormer, which is edited by Andrew Allenheimer, whose web architect is Andrew Allenheimer, a.k.a. Weave, a guest of honor or a guest at the Laura Poitras' and Glenn Greenwald's party celebrating their receipt of the Polk Award. Allenheimer, a.k.a. Weave, is a brilliant hacker believed to be resident in Ukraine, whose activities have been linked to some of the high-profile hacks that have been blamed on Russia. That user for the Daily Stormer observed about Ukraine, saying, will the National Socialist Revolution begin in Ukraine? And what we are going to be looking at in this program, and in retrospect we have been considering in our last shows, is the geopolitical position of Ukraine in the Earth Island, and in turn the position that affords for networking between fascist elements, not only in Europe but also in Russia and around the world. In future discussion, we are going to talk, at least in part, about Russian fascism. There is a very powerful fascist milieu in Russia. Should Vladimir Putin or someone of more intelligent and moderate instincts be overthrown, or should he, when he steps down, be succeeded by someone of the Vladimir Zhirinovsky stripe, or someone a little more diplomatic but of the same orientation as the German-financed Russian fascist Vladimir Zhirinovsky? then we might see a fascist Russia united with a fascist Europe in a global nuclear-armed and fundamentally anti-American and anti-Semitic alliance. In the book, Francis Parker, Dreamer of the Day, Francis Parker Yockey and the Post-War Fascist International, something that we have dealt with in our many interviews with Kevin Coogan and in numerous programs as well. We noted that the aforementioned Francis Parker Yockey, a prominent, although generally little recognized theoretician and agent of the Post-War Fascist International, ultimately advocated something he termed the Imperium, a united fascist Europe vehemently opposed to Jews, and even perhaps more than that, the U.S. itself. Yockey saw America as arguably the embodiment and focal point of all evil on this world, and although of American birth, he was intractably and vehemently anti-American. And should a Yockeyite milieu come to prevail in the Earth Island, at least much of it, including Russia, this country is going to be in even worse shape than it is now, and it is in pretty goddamn bad shape right now. Something to think about. Then we will get to Harold Mackinder, Zbigniew Brzezinski, and geopolitical conceptions of Ukraine as it relates to the Earth Island. But before we get to that, I want to highlight the role of Ukraine and Azov Battalion in the online world. The gaming network and networks such as Steam, that we looked at in, for the record, 1003. Steam itself and related portals has something like 173 different sites that advocate for school shooting. The susceptibility and psychological vulnerability of teens and young people in general to the blandishments and the seductive presentations online is something that really needs to be very carefully considered. A milieu like YouTube, social media, gaming networks, these are things that have been used very cleverly by fascist elements for outreach. And among the people who appear to have come under sway, or the sway, of networks like that, were two teenagers in Canada named Cam McLeod and Briar Schmigelsky. McLeod, M-C, capital L-E-O-D, and Briar Schmigelsky, S-C-H-M-E-G-E-L-S-K-Y, the latter of Ukrainian heritage. They apparently murdered a couple in Manitoba and may very well have slain another man as well. They then led the RCMP on something of a chase. Ultimately, their burned-out camper was found, and they were believed to have perished in some of the formidable swampland in Manitoba. But what is notable for our purposes here is their apparent seduction by Nazi/fascist ideology, which in turn appears to have been not only presented by the Azov Battalion or elements resonant with the Azov Battalion, but something that was carried to these unfortunate young men by what is known as extreme culture. Extreme culture not only embraces many Nazi and fascist elements, but other iconic or refractory things as well. I touched on extreme culture and counterculture fascism in For the Record program number 437. That program and some of the comments that have been entered upon it, I think, will serve as something of an introduction. Although it did not receive as much publicity as it might have. The aforementioned Canadian youth, Cam McLeod and Bryosh Nagelsky, apparently people who became murderers of three people, seemingly for no reason. They appear to have been ideological converts, or at least under the sway of Nazi-slash-fascist ideology, including the iconography of an ideology of the Azov Battalion through their online activities. So in addition to the networking between the Azov milieu and fascist groups in Europe, as well as in America, and the combat training many of these fascists are receiving in the civil war in Ukraine, they then take that, their acquired skill or further polished skill in combat arms, and bring it back to their country of origin. The role of Ukraine as something of an online network, online epicenter of fascist radiation or fascist ideological radiation as well is something to consider here.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
The following excerpts come from a Globe and Mail article, that is Toronto Globe and Mail, from July 23rd of this year, 2019. RCMP continue search for suspects in three BC slayings by Ian Bailey, Mike Hager, and Justin Ling, L-I-N-G. Two teens missing after the roadside slayings of three people in northern British Columbia over the past week have now been named suspects and are believed to be on the run through Western Canada. RCMP say the pair have been spotted in northern Saskatchewan and Manitoba, and investigators are cautioning the public that the fugitives are armed and should not be approached. A flood of tips since Monday has propelled the investigation into the roadside slayings of a traveling couple, and more than 500 kilometers away, the body of a man police had not identified. The teens, Cam McLeod and Bryosh Nagelsky, were originally reported missing after their burned-out camper truck was found on Friday, but police had changed that assessment. Mr. Schmigelski's Instagram page shows the two posing for a photo with Mr. Schmigelski's arm slung over Mr. McLeod. The teens have Facebook pages under their own names, and both are linked to an account called Elusive Gaming. I-L-L-U-S-I-V-E. That username, complete with a misspelling, also shows up on YouTube, as well as video game networks Twitch and Steam. They share similar imagery and themes, including the communist icon, far-right politics, sexualized Japanese anime, and the survivalist video game Rust. The banner image for the Elusive Gaming YouTube account features a modified Soviet flag, but its profile picture is the heraldic eagle of Hitler's Germany. The page was active as of 6 months ago. More about this account. Steam accounts linked to Mr. Schmigelski and Mr. McLeod were last active a week before their pickup truck was found on fire on BC's Highway 37. A Steam user confirmed to the Golden Mail that he talked to Mr. Schmigelski regularly online. He recalled Mr. McLeod joining their chats as well. The user, whom the Globe is not identifying, provided photos sent by an account believed to be owned by Mr. Schmigelski, showing him in military fatigues, brandishing what appears to be an airsoft rifle which fires plastic pellets. Another photo shows a swastika armband, and yet another features Mr. Schmigelski in a gas mask. The photos were reportedly sent in the fall of 2018, but the user said he stopped playing online games with Mr. Smigelski earlier this year after he continued to praise Hitler's Germany. One account connected to the teens used the logo of the Azov Battalion, a far-right Ukrainian militia that has been accused of harboring sympathies to neo-Nazis. Another account claims to be located in Russia near Moscow and belongs to several groups for fans of sexualized Japanese animation. That account also used the heraldic eagle of the Nazis. Note here, the presence of the logo of the Azov Battalion in this apparent online outreach milieu. Note also that there are accounts that are apparently in Russia and Moscow. Again, there is a virulent Russian fascist community, and we will touch on that when we get to the long academic pedantic discussion of the evolution of the Intermarium concept from the post-World War I period on up through the present. And note that in addition to actual physical networking, networking between fascist institutions in Europe and in the U.S., and in addition to the presence in the Russian Civil War within fascist units like Pravysekr and Azov, of lone wolf combatants who then can bring their combat skills back to their country of origin. Ukraine and the combat and the fascism that is right on the surface and deeply implanted in the Ukrainian national security and political establishments has a strong online gravitas as well. And given the susceptibility of many young people, alienated young people in particular, and there is no shortage of those, given the sorry conditions that they are growing up in, that online outreach should not be underestimated in terms of its importance or potentially lethal results. Now, we are going to talk about Ukraine and, again, its position in the Earth Island. We will be excerpting something we spoke about in a previous program, one of our discussions with Paul Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Gould. They are the authors of this article, which is from Op-Ed News of June 4th of 2015. The title, America Pivots to Brzezinski's Delusion of Eurasian Conquest, unquote. I would not necessarily term this a delusion. It is an ideological concept, and it is one that did not begin with Brzezinski, nor did it end with his passing. Briefly, they talk about the evolution of this concept, its adoption by Zbigniew Brzezinski, and the conception by Sir Halford Mackinder, M-A-C-K-I-N-D-E-R, in 1904, of Ukraine's position in Central and Eastern Europe as a pivot area. The article reads in part, Russia historian Stephen Cohen points to the neoconservative establishment for America's latest outbreak of what can only be referred to as late-stage imperial dementia. Neocons Robert Kagan and wife Victoria Nuland certainly have done the heavy lifting to make Ukraine the staging ground for what appears to be a NATO blitzkrieg on Moscow. But whatever the determination of the neocon plot, they are only the barking dogs of master imperialist Zbigniew Brzezinski, whose grand design has been creeping over the globe since he stepped into the Oval Office as National Security Advisor to President Jimmy Carter in 1977. Brzezinski stands apart as the inspiration for the Ukraine crisis. His 1997 book, The Grand Chessboard, American Primacy and Its Geostrategic Imperatives, lays out the blueprint for how American primacists should feel towards drawing Ukraine away from Russia because, quote, without Ukraine, Russia ceases to be a Eurasian empire, unquote. Brzezinski's obsession derives from British geographer Sir Halford Mackinder's 1904 definition of the Central and Eastern European nations of Europe as the pivot area, unquote, whose geographic position made them, quote, the vital springboards for the attainment of continental domination, unquote. Whether anyone realizes it, the Obama administration's current campaign against Russia in Ukraine is of Mackinder's design brought forward by Brzezinski. I would submit that actually Brzezinski is, although certainly carrying forward a concept that was formally minted perhaps by Mackinder, but actually, as we are about to see in a long discussion of an academic paper about the Intermarium, the concept of Central and Eastern Europe as a decisive element both for containing Russia or for anti-Russian activity, and in its initial manifestation for holding Germany at bay as well. It was not minted by Zbigniew Brzezinski. It predates him. Note that originally Poland and the dictator or the, quote, president, unquote, he really was in effect a dictator for two different periods of time, Józef Piłsudski, who came to be head of state of Poland, which had been part of various empires for something like 123 years. He saw containing Germany and also the fledgling Soviet Union as being paramount. Ultimately, however, the networks that he utilized, Ukrainian fascists, although they weren't formally termed them at that point, termed fascists at that point, fascists from areas like Lithuania and others, the dominant element in Pilsudski's Intermarium or Promethean network was in fact Ukrainian. There were Ukrainian fascists associated with Simon or Semyon Petliura, and they ultimately gave rise to the OUNB. As we examine this paper, there is a lot to consider. The Intermarium and Promethean League networks, and we spoke about these in AFA program number 14, among others. We've come back to the Promethean League and other discussions. They not only involved reactionaries and fascists from Central and Eastern Europe, Ukrainians in particular, but they also involved Turks and pan-Turkist elements. We will touch back on that, and I think as we assess the Earth Island and the campaign against China that appears to be underway, or certainly is underway, the role of promoting not only pan-Turkists, but other ethnic groups in order to fracture China should be considered. One of the concepts that Pilsudski embraced was what he called Prometheanism. That was named after the Greek mythological figure Prometheus, who got fire from the gods and gave it to humankind and then was damned and so forth. But it meant to Pilsudski the activation, politically and ideologically, of various ethnic groups within the country. And it was believed by Pilsudski and others that when ethnic groups were mobilized and ideologized and received financial and or military support for their activities, this would be a defining phenomenon in politics. In past programs, we've spoken about the German concept of Volksgruppenrechte. That is the idea of mobilizing the rights of various ethnic peoples, and has been utilized not only as a vehicle for destabilizing various sovereign nations, but has been adopted by the UNPO, the Unrepresented Nations and Peoples Organization, that was birthed by Karl von Habsburg, who, by the way, was married for a time to Francesca Thyssen-Bornemisza. This marries the House of Habsburg with the remarkable and deadly Bormann group, about which we have spoken so often. And the UNPO, by the way, doesn't just target elements like the Uyghurs, which they do, and the Tibetans, which they do. They viewed Kosovo as their first real triumph. They also champion the role of the downtrodden Afrikaners from the former apartheid regime in South Africa, and they have targeted the Lakota in the American West. The Lakota have been thoroughly screwed and brutalized by the U.S. They also, however, happen to sit atop the Bakken oil shale field, a major area of interest to fossil fuels firms, Xinjiang province in China, also a focal point of UNPO activity with the Uyghurs, also happens to be rich in minerals and petroleum in particular. So the concept of Prometheanism, activating, ideologizing, and mobilizing ethnic groups, is central to the idea of the Intermarium and also the overlapping Promethean League. It also has been carried forward by German geopoliticians and ideologists as Lux Gruppenrechte, and also by the UNPO as well. Note that the Intermarium networks and the Promethean networks were absorbed by and utilized by Nazi Germany. Then, when the Galen spy organization and related elements like the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations jumped to Western intelligence and found alliance with them, those Promethean-born elements and the Intermarium-born elements jumped with them. Again, as we will see, central to the Intermarium and central to the Promethean League are the Ukrainian fascists, who were to coalesce formally as the OUN, the OUNB, and the OUNM, and which operated on behalf of Nazi Germany against the former Soviet Union, and, by the way, against Poland. They wreaked horrendous, bloody atrocities against the population of Poland, as well as, predictably, the Jews in that part of the world. And ultimately, the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, which evolved from the Ukrainian fascists, who were a fundamental element of the Intermarium and the overlapping Promethean League, came to dominate the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and went to work for Western intelligence. The collapse of the former Soviet Union, we talked about the introduction of elements like that from the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations into the weakened Soviet Union under Glasnost, in, among other shows, AFA 36 and AFA 37. And we recapped the Ukrainian role in that in For the Record program 777 and 778. We've spoken about the OUNB and their role in the assassination of President Kennedy in the aforementioned For the Records 777 and 778, as well as For the Record 876. Those elements then became a primary force in the return to power within the political and national security establishments of Ukraine, of the OUNB elements that were loyal to Stefan or revered Stefan Bandera, and also Roman Shukhevich and the UPA. We'll be taking a look at how elements associated with the Reagan administration helped to bring those elements to the fore in Ukraine. And we will also talk about networking between reactionary elements in various Central European, Eastern European nations, and how the Trump administration is looking, and elements associated with it are looking to those nations to create something of a new Europe, a an alternative to what in certain social pronouncements are the relatively liberal politics of Western Europe, or the Western European elements of the EU. We should also note the concept of the Intermarium as a major feature of ideology and discussion in national security-related circles in the U.S. that have been very much behind the push to put the OUNB-related success, or the OUN successor organizations, into national security and political power in Ukraine. Organizations like the Atlantic Council, STRAT4, founded by a Hungarian-born man named Friedman, George Friedman, are elements that we will be talking about here. But again, note the continuity of Ukrainian fascism, although it wasn't even called that, from the immediate post-World War I period through Pilsudski's creation of the Intermarium and the overlapping Promethean League, then how those networks flourished in combination with primarily British and French intelligence in the pre-World War II period. They then were absorbed into Third Reich intelligence, and then they jumped to Western intelligence with the Galen Org, the ABN, and related elements. Ultimately, with the end of the Cold War and the collapse of the Soviet Union that they were much involved with, they were projected back into power in various Eastern European countries, including Ukraine. So that is what we will be focusing on, but the continuity here is something to bear in mind. Bear in mind, too, that Simon Petliura, one of the very first, they call him Ukrainian nationalist here, was a brutal pogromist whose forces slaughtered thousands of Jews, tens of thousands of Jews. He ultimately was assassinated by a Ukrainian Jew in Paris whose family had been butchered by Petliura's fighting forces. Note that Vladimir Jabotinsky, the ideological front from which Benjamin Netanyahu and the fascist element in the Zionist movement have sprung, Vladimir Jabotinsky was an associate of Simon Petliura and sought to merge his forces with those of Simon Petliura. We'll perhaps touch back on that. Maybe we'll continue our 2019 fascism world tour, our fascist world tour, and touch on what is going on and has been going on in the Middle East. However, for the remainder of this show, and certainly the next show, maybe even more after that, depending on how long it takes to do this, we are going to be reading from an article from Covert Action magazine from March 23rd of 2019. The article is called "Imagine Geographies of Central and Eastern Europe, the Concept of Intermarium." Now note that Intermarium and the Intermarium Project are major focal points of Azov Battalion, or Azov Milieu activity, as we saw a couple of shows ago.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
This article was authored by Marlene Laruelle, M-A-R-L-E-M-E-L-A-R-U-E-L-L-E. She is an academician from Paris. And Ellen Rivera, R-I-V-E-R-A. And again, this is an extremely pedantic show. I hope that this is a very pedantic academic paper. I hope it is not too much so. I hope that listeners to this program will read the online description. And in the event, here goes, from Covert Action magazine from March 23rd of 2019, "Imagined Geographies of Central and Eastern Europe, the Concept of Intermarium." And the authors have an introduction, or the editors, rather, this article, originally published as a paper for the Institute for European, Russian, and Eurasian Studies, or IERES, is the first in our series of in-depth analyses focusing on the activities of the far right and its various contemporaneous and historical liaisons with intelligence agencies. The presidency of Donald Trump has accelerated an ambiguous relationship to Europe in the hope of shifting Europe's, and particularly NATO's, center of gravity from the Paris-Berlin axis to a more central and Eastern European hub, a hub which sees itself as the other, unquote, Europe, that is, opposed to the European Union and its so-called liberal social welfare programs and values. After the Russian Revolution, the West backed first a military invasion and then the white armies against the new Soviet state. When these efforts failed, the West then backed Polish leader Józef Piłsudski and Ukrainian nationalist Simon Petliura's Russo-Polish War based on the dual concepts of Intermarium and the Prometheus Project, parenthetically in AFA program number one. We spoke about how Herbert Hoover, who went on to become president of the U.S., obviously, channeled food aid meant to aid the people who were starving as a result of World War One and all of the upheaval in Eastern Europe and Poland. He channeled it rather to provide military aid to the combatants fighting against the former Soviet Union. That again in AFA number one. Resuming again with this last sentence. When these efforts failed, the West then backed Polish leader Józef Piłsudski and the Ukrainian nationalist Simon Petliura's Russo-Polish War based on the dual concepts of Intermarium and the Prometheus Project. Once again, now led by the U.S., right-wing anti-Russia forces are looking to Poland and its ultra-anti-Russian allies to lead an increasingly aggressive front against Russia. The U.S. has been pouring weapons into Eastern Europe, backed up by an aggressive program of military training and military exercises. An aggressive system of bilateral military agreements between the U.S. and its East European allies threatened to pull Western Europe into a multilateral conflict with Russia via Article 5 of the NATO Charter. The authors trace these historical developments as a resurrection of the Intermarium, a geopolitical concept that envisioned an alliance of countries reaching from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea to the Aegean Sea that would serve as an alternative power bloc between Germany and Russia. Marlene Laguerre, Ph.D., is an associate director and research professor at the Institute for European, Russian, and Eurasian Studies, Elliott School of International Affairs. Ellen Rivera is an independent researcher specialized in the post-war German far right, with a particular focus on post-war anti-communist organizations. And then the main body of this paper. Like the proverbial cat, some concepts have several lives. Or, like the mythological phoenix, they can be reborn from the ashes. This is certainly the case of the Intermarium. By the way, it's capital I-N-T-E-R-M-A-R-I-U-M. It means between the seas, literally, beginning again. This is certainly the case of the Intermarium, a geopolitical concept that envisaged an alliance of countries reaching from the Baltic Sea over the Black Sea to the Aegean Sea that would serve as a third power bloc between Germany and Russia. The Intermarium belongs to the long genealogy of geopolitical concepts looking for and promoting a Central and Eastern European unity sandwiched between a Mittel-Jerol ponder German leadership in the 19th century, and a mere abroad, a Mittel-Europa under German leadership in the 19th century, and a mere abroad under Moscow's supervision after 1991, the middle of Europe, or the land between the seas, unquote, has been searching for historical models in everything from the Jagiellonian dynasty and the Polish-Lithuanian Rzeczpospolita to the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And by the way, the spellings, I'll give you an idea of how I'm not going to spell it. I'm going to spell it RZECZPOSPOLITA. If I haven't mispronounced that, I'm doing something wrong, probably. But again, please check the original paper for some of these spellings. Of Intermarium, they write, launched by Polish state leader Joseph Pilsudski, P-I-L-S-U-B-S-K-I, in the 1920s, the idea of a Medjimorje, the land between the seas, Latinized as Intermarium, has since been regularly revived in evolving contexts and finds itself reactivated today. In its current form, it refers to the central and eastern New Europe, unquote, dear to George Bush, Donald Rumsfeld, and now Donald Trump, celebrated for being more pro-Atlanticist than the Western Old Europe, unquote, which is seen as being too conciliatory with Russia. The Intermarium has also gradually come to comprise a conservative Central and Eastern Europe that sees itself as the other, unquote, Europe, that is, opposed to the European Union, and advances a conservative agenda, sometimes permeable, as we see in the Ukrainian case, to far-right ideological schemes. The Intermarium has also, gradually, come to comprise a conservative Central and Eastern Europe that sees itself as the other Europe, that is, opposed to the European Union, and advances a conservative agenda, sometimes permeable, as we see in the Ukrainian case, to the far-right ideological schemes. Again, repeating that last sentence. While the early history of the Intermarium has received little attention from scholars, with the only example of such research being a doctoral dissertation by political scientist and attorney member of the International Criminal Court, Bar Jonathan Levy, even less academic attention has been paid to the revival of the term since the 2000s. Yet it was deployed by former United States Army Europe Commander General Ben Hodges to describe the U.S. strategy for Central and Eastern Europe before being revived on a much broader scale by the Polish Party of Law and Justice, as well as by the Ukrainian far-right movements in the wake of the Euromaidan. To understand the many lives of this concept, one has to think of it as an imagined geography, unquote, a concept famously launched by Edward Said to interpret the notion of Orient, or a geopolitical imaginary in Gerard Toll's perspective, a set of shared representations of power relations and geography that may impact policy decisions and popular perceptions of the world order. We propose here to follow Felix Berenskoeter, B-E-R-E-N-S-K-O-E-P-P-E-R, in his approach to concept analysis and see this Intermarium geopolitical concept as having a cognitive function which can be broken in four dimensions. Sociopolitical formation of the concept within a political system, its use among different actors, and its contestation, temporal historicity of a concept, material, how the concept manifests itself and its agency, and theoretical, how the concept is situated in a broader ideational realm. The first major section of the paper, Intermarium 1. Whipped Central Europe after the empires. The idea of the creation of a third power bloc between Western Europe, particularly Germany and Russia, which came to be known as Intermarium, emerged from the period in which the Austro-Hungarian Empire was being dismembered in line with the Treaty of Versailles that brought an end to the First World War. In 1919, Sir Halford Mackinder, by the way, alluded to, obviously, in the Paul Fitzgerald and Elizabeth Gould article, Sir Halford Mackinder, discussing the opposition between the heartland continental powers and sea powers, UK at that time, was already mentioning the need for a, quote, middle tier of East Europe, unquote, going from the Baltic Sea to the Adriatic to federate in order to resist both Germany and Russia. Perhaps the smaller powers will set about federating among themselves. A Scandinavian group, a group of the middle tier of East Europe, Poland to Yugoslavia, and a Spanish South American group, if not also including Brazil, may all perhaps be attainable. But the most well-known proponent of this Intermarium concept in its first iteration was the Polish leader Józef Piłsudski, who at the beginning of the 20th century had attempted to create paramilitary units, the combat organization of the Polish Socialist Party, to free Poland from the yoke of the three encroaching empires, Germany, Austria-Hungary, and Russia. His return to Poland after the defeat of the Central Powers in World War I gave rise to the proclamation of the Second Independent Polish Republic, 1918 to 1939, of which he became head of state from 1918 to 1922, a period that largely coincided with the Polish-Soviet War of 1919 to 1921. As Poland became independent in 1918, after 123 years of foreign control, Piłsudski envisioned a federation of Eastern European states that would together be strong enough to fend off potentially belligerent neighbors, particularly a downsized Germany offended by the loss of Eastern Prussia and a rising Soviet Union. These early unsuccessful plans for an Eastern European federation, unquote, a Polish-Lithuanian commonwealth accompanied by a currency and customs union with Belarus, Latvia, and Estonia, roughly paralleled the Jagiellonian Commonwealth of the Res Postpolita, which existed from the 16th century until Poland's third dismemberment in 1795. While still in Versailles, August Zaleski, Z-A-L-E-S-K-I, who would later become Polish foreign minister, led talks with representatives of Lithuania and Ukraine about forming a federation. Shortly thereafter, in 1919 to 1920, Piłsudski reconceptualized the federation as a broader Eastern European League of Nations. Poland and Lithuania would again form a federal state in the East, with Belarus being granted special autonomy. Ukraine and Romania would enter into a military and political confederacy with Poland, Finland, and the Baltic states were to form a Baltic bloc, unquote, while Azerbaijan, Georgia, and Armenia would comprise a federal state of Caucasia, unquote. These early plans for an Eastern European Federation did not come to fruition. No new state wanted to find itself under Polish leadership. Instead, Belarus and Ukraine reintegrated into the Soviet Union, while Lithuania became an independent country. The never-ratified Warsaw Contract of March of 1922 was, according to the German historian Hubert Leschnick, quote, the last serious effort by Polish diplomacy to establish an intermarium, and during the term of Foreign Minister Aleksander Skrzydzinski, Polish for, and the MSZ, Polish Foreign Ministry, ultimately bowed out of all Infirmarian conceptions, unquote. During his second stint as de facto state leader, 1926 to 1935, Pilsudski's primary focus was on ensuring that the provisions of the Treaty of Versailles were upheld. Nevertheless, that period also saw the establishment of the Promethean League, a semi-clandestine network that envisioned cooperation between a group of nations fighting against the Soviet Union. The Promethean League had its ideological roots in Pilsudski's long-time geopolitical strategy of Prometheanism, i.e., the idea that any great power would collapse if its ethnic minorities were empowered, just as the Greek Prometheus helped mankind emerge from the shadow of the gods when he was given fire. According to the British scholar and journalist Stephen Dorrill, D-O-R-R-I-L, or Dorrill, the Promethean League served as an anti-communist umbrella organization for anti-Soviet exiles displaced after the Ukrainian government of Simon Petliura, from 1879 to 1926, gave up the fight against the Soviets in 1922. It was established by the Ukrainian emigre Roman Smolstocky, that's R-O-M-A-N, last name, capital S-M-A-L, hyphen S-T-O-C-K-Y, and based in Warsaw. But as Dorrill affirms, quote, the real leadership and latent power within the Promethean League emanated from the Petliura-dominated Ukrainian Democratic Republic in exile and its Polish sponsors. The Poles benefited directly from this arrangement, as Promethean military assets were absorbed into the Polish army, with Ukrainian, Georgian, and Armenian contract officers not uncommon in the ranks. The alliance between Pilsudski and Petliura became very unpopular among many Western Ukrainians, as it resulted in Polish domination of their lands. This opposition joined the insurgent Ukrainian Military Organization, or UVO, founded in 1920, which later transformed into the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN. Pilsudski's early Infirmarian plans and later the Promethean Project were clandestinely supported by French and British intelligence. These links dated back to the First World War, when France supported Pilsudski's troops in the hope of defeating the Soviets. In February of 1921, Pilsudski traveled to Paris, where, during negotiations with French President Alexandre Mitterrand, the foundations of the Franco-Polish military alliance were laid. Note, by the way, the role of Georgian combatants in the civil war in Ukraine. The Georgian National Legion is fighting there. One of the soldiers from the U.S. Army who fought there joined the Georgian National Legion. And the UNA, UNSO, one of the iterations of the UPA, fought in the Georgian-Russian War of 2008. We will be continuing with a reading of this article in our next program. However, this concludes For the Record program number 1098. Fascism, 2019 World Tour, Part 8, The Infirmarium Concept. This is being recorded on November 12th of the year 2019. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.